Okay, good morning, everybody. This is BioT31. It's December 5th. Let's look at the schedule. On the left-hand side, I'm going to turn some of these lights down. Thank you so much. Okay, so we said today's the 5th, and we're going to finish up urinary system and get into diversification system, but we're going to have a lecture to finish up diversification system on Monday, so that should put you in good position for the exam, the last exam on Wednesday. Those are the chapters. Okay, we're also scheduled for the Wednesday labs to have a practicum that day, but fortunately, I'm going to give an option to these students that are in a Wednesday lab to take a practicum on Monday, and it'll be about an hour after your usual time on Monday. So if your usual time is 7:30 on Wednesday, you could take it about an hour after 7:30, so between 8:30 and 9 o'clock on Monday. So you don't have a practicum and a lecture exam on the same day. All right, so that's just an option. And the same goes for the afternoon class. And if you want to talk to me about that schedule, you're very welcome to. Okay, so I'm going to offer the Wednesday practicum on Monday, right up over here in this area, if you wish to do that. Anybody have a question on the schedule? Oh, there's one other comment I have about the schedule, and it has to do with the online component of the class. And there is a deadline this week. What week are we finishing up in Blackboard? Yeah, week 15 out of 16 weeks. So don't forget to do one of those last quizzes, week 15 by Friday at 11 p.m. And then there's one more after that for next week 16. Okay, and that's going to be due Friday at 11. But Blackboard is going to go away on Saturday. It's just going to totally disappear. So if you could get that last quiz done sooner rather than later, then I can get your final grades calculated on Wednesday, right after you take the test, and I can archive the Blackboard site so that if it disappears on Saturday, like everybody says, it's okay. All right, but I just won't be able to access Blackboard after Friday. So see what I'm saying? Get that week 16 quiz done right away. Okay? And then I'll grade your last exam and you'll know right away what the course grade is. Okay. So that means also, since Blackboard is going away, after Friday, I won't be able to make any corrections in your grades. If I entered a grade wrong in Blackboard, then that's too bad. Okay? So make sure all your grades are correct in Blackboard. And it is possible to put in a negative number in your grade book, which means then that that number is subtracted from your overall course point. So that's why you really got to double check. Hopefully I didn't make any mistakes. I catch it every once in a while. Okay, so that's the schedule. And then what happens after the final? Well, then it just, yeah, then you got a bunch of weeks off. But if you're going to take physiology, I would still study a little bit every day, because that's a really good habit, and you're going to have to do that anyway in physiology. Actually, you might have to study a lot every day for a physiology class if you're moving on. And don't forget, for physiology, I recommend a college-level chemistry class before physiology. And you can talk to me about that. Every student that has taken my advice has thanked me. Okay, so make sure you ask me about that. Okay, so urinary system, we were looking at, well, everything in the urinary system, but in particular, it's a pretty easy system because you only have, okay, four organs associated with, at least in terms of gross anatomy. You've got the kidneys, okay, and one of the major functions of the kidney is to produce urine, and then that urine flows through the second structure, which is a ureter, to the urinary bladder, which is the third structure, and then the fourth structure is what? It's another tube. What's the fourth structure of the urinary system? The urethra. Okay, so don't confuse ureter and urethra. So the ureters are like the afferent vessels, and the urethra is like the efferent vessel to the urinary bladder. All right, so you're familiar with that. We also looked at all the different subdivisions of the kidney. So we looked at the pyramids right here and the columns. and the calyces, the fibrous capsule on the outside, the cortex, which is the superficial region, and the medulla is the deep region that contains the pyramids. And then we also looked at the blood supply. I think we looked at this. All right, so the renal artery comes in at the hilus of the kidney, right, and then it bifurcates. And that first bifurcation is what we call a segmental artery. And that segmental artery is going to go up through a column. Okay, when it gets into a column, and it's probably going to have to bifurcate before it gets into a column, this right here is an interlobar artery. The interlobar artery feeds arteries that curve over the base of the pyramids. So let me see if I can find a nice picture of that. Yeah, right here. Okay, so here is the interlobar artery. These are what we call the arcuate arteries as they arch over the base of this pyramid. And then there are distributing arteries that project up into the cortex, and these we call the cortical radiate arteries. And the cortical radiate arteries supply blood to the nephron. And in lab, we looked at that first vascular element that brings blood into a nephron. Can anybody remember what that is? The hint is, it's on this slide. Yeah, the afferent arteriole. I can just barely see it right up over here, these little spikes sticking out. That would be the afferent arteriole, which is taking blood to a structure. What structure is it taking it to? I guess you could answer that a number of different ways, but I'm thinking about a vascular structure in particular. Okay, yeah, the glomerulus. And don't forget, the glomerulus is a capillary. It's a special leaky capillary. It leaks a lot of plasma out, but no blood cells should go through the glomerulus into Bowman's capsule, which is the first part of the tubular element of the nephron. So white blood cells should stay in the blood, and red blood cells should stay in the blood. They shouldn't get into the tubular elements of the nephron. Okay, if they do, then that's a sign of pathology. So let's take a look at this glomerulus in a little bit greater detail. We have something called the filtration membrane, just like what we had for the respiratory system. And let's see where that glomerulus is. All right, here it is. So here's the afferent arteriole. And what does an arteriole always bring blood to? A capillary, right? So this first capillary right here is what we call the glomerulus. It's inside Bowman's capsule. And Bowman's capsule is not open to the outside world, so you should think of this as a serous membrane that folds around the glomerular capillaries. All right, so how many divisions, how many types of membranes do you know of? The two major kinds. Yeah, there's two major kinds. And what are they? Serous and mucus. And a mucus is open to the outside world, serous is not open to the outside world, this is not open to the outside world, so you would want to think of this membrane as being like a serous membrane. And it has three parts to it. It has one part that's right on the visceral organ, or in this case, the glomerulus, and we're going to call that the visceral division of Bowman's capsule, right? And then it's continuous with the parietal division of the glomerular capsule, or Bowman's capsule. So don't forget, this membrane is continuous, but we have different names for it because it's on different parts of this thing that we call the renal corpuscle. So glomerulus inside Bowman's capsule is a renal corpuscle. And the visceral layer of Bowman's capsule, you can see, is not continuous. It has a bunch of holes in it, and that's very important for this first process that produces urine. Okay, a lot of plasma leaks out. And here is just the proximal convoluted tubule. So let's zoom in to a capillary. So here is a capillary. We looked at capillaries in the blood vessel chapter, and we learned that there were three different kinds of capillaries. Some where the endothelial cells are tightly packed together, and they're not very leaky. There are some spaces between them, okay, but not very many. So it's the most secure kind of capillary. Then this fenestrated capillary is very leaky because it has pores. I see a pore right here, and small molecules can leak out of the blood. And when they leak out of here, where do they end up? All right, so we zoomed into this area. Then they end up in Bowman's capsule. That fluid ends up in Bowman's capsule. So all kinds of small molecules like water, for instance, sodium and potassium, glucose, and maybe some things like urea, just move from high pressure to low pressure inside Bowman's capsule. That motion of fluid from this capillary into Bowman's capsule is called filtration. And that's going to be one of the first processes of three that produces urine in the kidney. So filtration is the first one. We'll go over this a couple times. Filtration happens between blood in the capillary and fluid in the Bowman's capsule. And can anybody tell me, after that process of filtration, what do we call that fluid in Bowman's capsule? It's called the filtrate. Yeah, so that's not too hard to remember because we know this is filtration. All right, let's look at a little bit better microscopic. Here's a really pretty scanning electron micrograph of the glomerulus covered by these podocytes that make up the visceral division of Bowman's capsule. Okay, and here's an illustration. Here is blood in the glomerulus, and here is filtrate in Bowman's capsule, and this is the filtration membrane. And since it's a fenestrated capillary, there are big pores between, or even within an endothelial cell of the capillary. And then here is a little basement membrane to kind of glue things together. And then here is the foot process of a podocyte that makes up that visceral division of Bowman's capsule. And you can see that there are large filtration slits between the foot processes of those podocytes. And so that's very easy for small molecules just to leak out. And plasma is high pressure, the filtrate is low pressure, so fluid just moves right into the Bowman's capsule as a result of that pressure gradient. Okay, carrying along with it all kinds of compounds that your body needs, as well as waste products. Okay, so that's the filtration membrane. And here is a pretty nice illustration of the nephron. We drew these out. I think maybe we'll draw it out in lecture once again. Here is the arcuate artery, right between that's right at the junction of the cortex and the medulla within the kidney. Here is that cortical radiate artery, and then a branch off of that is the afferent arteriole, bringing blood into the glomerulus. So this is pretty nice because I see all the parts of the tubular elements. Nice. It's a nice simple diagram. So this here is the proximal convoluted tubule because it has all these twists and turns in it. Here is the descending loop of Henle, ascending loop of Henle, distal convoluted tubule, and then finally you have fluid entering the collecting duct, and that is urine that enters the collecting duct. It's been processed by all of these tubes and also with an interaction with the blood supply that surrounds these tubes. Can anybody remember, it's not shown on this diagram, but here's the efferent arteriole bringing blood out of the glomerulus. And then what's the next vascular element after the efferent arteriole that surrounds all of these tubes of the nephron? Yeah, the peritubular capillaries. And there's something special that goes on between the tubular elements of the nephron and the peritubular capillaries. Okay, we looked at one special thing already between the glomerulus and Bowman's capsule. There's a process happening in here. Can anybody remember what I called that process this morning? Okay, that is, it's producing filtrate, so it is filtration, right? All small molecules can move through those pores of the fenestrated capillary or glomerulus. Okay, the other pictures in your book of a nephron are pretty complicated, right? So I don't like them necessarily, so they're not exam figures. Can I find one? I guess this is one right here. Okay, and so it's a little difficult to see, but if you're really careful, you can trace the proximal convoluted tubule because it's close to Bowman's capsule, right? And then the descending loop, ascending loop, and then the distal convoluted tubule, but it's a little bit too complicated. All right, so I don't like this figure, so in your study guide, I gave you a nice simplified nephron, and if you know that, then you're going to be in really good shape, next semester or semester thereafter, or in 10 years. You don't have to be familiar with this. But I do see something interesting on this illustration, and that is I see one nephron with a very short loop of Henle. It barely goes into the cortex because here's the line between the medulla and the cortex. Let's see if I can get my cursor working better. instead of it jumping around. Oh, that's much better. So here's the arcuate artery, arcuate vein. So this is the cortex down here. This is the cortex up here, and there's the medulla down over here. This is what we call a cortical nephron. It's working all the time. And we see that it's different in structure from this one, because notice that the loop of Henle goes very deep into the medulla of the cortex. This is what we call a juxtamedullary nephron, and this is the kind of nephron that's working very hard when you become dehydrated. When you're dehydrated, then it's best not to produce a lot of urine and lose water from your body. So this is the kind of nephron that can make very concentrated urine, but a very small amount. And that's under the condition when you're being dehydrated. So the kidney can help conserve water in the body because of these juxtamedullary nephrons. Okay, as opposed to these cortical nephrons. All right, I want to look at the three processes that produce urine. And maybe I don't have this on the word slide. Okay, but it's important for you to know what these three processes are. And there's a really good picture in your book. All right, so let's get our orientation. Let's get our bearings. Here we have the cortical radiate artery that feeds an afferent arteriole. And arterioles feed blood to a capillary. Here's that first capillary, the glomerulus. All right, and we have fluid leaking out of the blood into Bowman's capsule. This first process, you told me, is what we call filtration. And you could call it glomerular filtration if you feel like exercising your speaking muscles, right? But you can just call that filtration. So that's process number one. Water gets filtered out. Glucose gets filtered out. And even some harmful compounds like urea get filtered into Bowman's capsule. And then that fluid, and what's the name of that fluid? Filtrate moves through the rest of the tubular elements of the nephron, and it's just illustrated as a straight line, but you know that it's not just a simple short straight line like this. Okay, but for this illustration that will work just fine. So there are many important molecules that get filtered into these kidney tubules, and if they're left in the kidney tubule, where do they end up? So molecules like glucose and water, which are very important for you. If they're left in the filtrate inside these tubular elements, where do they end up? I have it pointed right here on this slide. Glucose and water ends up in urine, and then where does that go? Outside your body. You lose those molecules. Glucose is a very important energy molecule. All right, so your body does not want to lose glucose in the urine. If it does, I can give you an analogy. It would be like going to the gas station, right, and paying $5 a gallon of gas or whatever we're paying for gas now, fill up your gas tank completely and then get an ice pick and go back to your gas tank and put a hole in it. And what's going to happen to all that gasoline that you bought? It's going to leak out, right? You're going to lose all of that energy. So we don't want to lose glucose in urine. But glucose is a small molecule. It does get filtered out. But here is the second process. It takes important molecules that your body needs, like sodium and glucose and water, and it takes it from this fluid that's in this tube. What's the fluid here? Filtrate. And what's the fluid part of the material going through this tube here? Okay, it's blood, and the fluid part of blood is what we call plasma. All right. So glucose and water go from filtrate, and let's just call it blood. Okay, go from the filtrate back into blood. That process is what we call tubular reabsorption, the second process. So maybe draw in like glucose. So filtration goes, material goes from blood to filtrate. Tubular reabsorption means it goes from filtrate back into the blood, because the filtration process can't separate out harmful chemicals and very useful chemicals for you. But the tubular elements of the nephron are smart enough to do that. They have the mechanism inside those cells to be able to do that. All right, so we said this is a blood vessel, and we see things moving into this blood vessel from the filtrate. So what kind of blood vessel does that have to be? Because what's happening here? What is happening? I see some arrows going right, some arrows going left. Okay, you could say, well, this is resorption and this is secretion. And if we put those two together, we see what? Exchange taking place between the filtrate and blood. And what kind of blood vessel allows for exchange? Only a capillary because it's thin enough, right? So these are what we call peritubular capillaries because they completely surround all the tubes of the nephron. So this is sort of an interesting circulation system because I see two capillary beds back to back. And you should know on the tip of your tongue what we call a circulation that has two capillary beds back to back before it goes back to the heart. Usually it's just one. In the systemic circulation and pulmonary circulation, usually there's one capillary bed, but here there are two back to back. Anybody remember what we called that? Because we looked at it in the between the hypothalamus and pituitary, and between the intestines and the liver, there is another circulation just like that. And this is the third one. Yeah, and hepatic goes between the intestines and the liver, right? But the key term there is portal. Somebody said that, portal system. So a portal system, so here is a portal blood vessel that connects two capillary beds back to back before it goes back to the heart. Okay, so helpful compounds go from filtrate, like glucose, back into the blood. We call that resorption. But not all the harmful chemicals get filtered. Some urea, for instance, maybe some excess acid, maybe excess sodium, can't get filtered out and it still is in the blood, but these are harmful chemicals for your body, and these tubular elements and this capillary right here is smart enough to know that they should be excreted from your body in urine, and that process is what we call tubular secretion. So harmful compounds move into the filtrate by tubular secretion from the peritubular capillaries into some tubular element of the nephron. All right, so after filtration takes place, right, and then after the beneficial compounds are resorbed by tubular resorption, and after harmful chemicals in the blood are secreted into the filtrate, guess what this fluid becomes? It becomes urine, right? So the kidney processes that filtrate or makes filtrate and processes it into urine. And these are the three steps, filtration, resorption, and secretion. Okay, and you should appreciate the direction of these arrows right here. Okay, we're going to draw that on the board pretty soon. Let me see what else I want to talk about. We talked about blood vessels, urinary bladder, that's not too interesting, but sort of interesting. But here is something interesting, especially if you're going to go on to a physiology class. All right, so we see that one of the main functions of the kidney is to produce what? Urine. I'm circling that right now with the cursor. But it does other things. It helps regulate blood pressure. It helps control red blood cell production, like you see on the top of the list on this slide right here. So let's take a look at some really interesting sort of complication of a nephron. All right, so let's look at the overall illustration right here. I can see the Bowman's capsule, proximal convoluted tubule, right, descending loop, ascending loop, and distal convoluted tubule. And now this nephron is drawn the way it should be drawn. Okay, the ascending loop of Henle connects to the distal convoluted tubule and it passes right by the Bowman's capsule. You see it passing right by before it goes into the collecting duct? All right, so there's a special communication between the distal convoluted tubule and the vessels that are going into the glomerulus. So let's zoom into this region and I see it right here. And I know this is a blood vessel because what do I see in there? Red blood cells. I don't see any white blood cells, but there's some white blood cells in there. The filtration membrane is small enough so these cells can't leak into Bowman's capsule, but fluid does. All right, so here is that distal convoluted tubule passing right by Bowman's capsule and actually right in between the afferent and efferent arteriole. This area right here is what we call the juxtaglomerular apparatus. And it's very important for controlling blood pressure in our body. Okay, we have a couple of different kinds of cells. We have granular cells that surround the afferent arteriole, And then we also have the macular densa cells that make up the wall of the distal convoluted tubule, and they are in communication with each other. These cells, okay, the macula densa cells, under certain conditions, send a signal to these granular cells to secrete renin into the blood. And renin is an enzyme that converts things in your blood to increase your blood pressure. So that's going to be a really important mechanism that we study in physiology. And it starts with a compound, an enzyme called renin that's secreted into the blood right at the level of the kidney or the juxtaglomerular apparatus. And it's actually one of the tubular elements that is controlling that, is sending a signal. Okay, so I want in this class at least for you to know where that juxtaglomerular apparatus is, and at least sort of be familiar with that term renin. Okay, and what it's involved in, and that's helping regulate blood pressure. That's why we have blood pressure as one of the important functions of the kidney on the very first slide, word slide. Okay, the other thing that I can see, just in review, I can see the parietal layer of Bowman's capsule. Here's the visceral layer of Bowman's capsule, and of course then I can see the glomerulus with blood on the inside of it. These mesangial cells right here, we have no idea what their function is, but they might perform some kind of function that might be important for you to know about. And so I mentioned blood pressure is regulated in your body by this, by these chemicals right here. And is that an important consideration? Is blood pressure an important consideration in people? Yeah, because every time you go see a doctor and maybe even a dentist, what do? They check your blood pressure. They check for hypertension, right? So that is rampant in our society. It's epidemic, and unfortunately, it's deadly. Okay, it can kill the kidneys, because when these blood vessels get too high pressure, then they get disturbed. They get very large, and then the kidney stops working. All right, these capillaries in the heart get enlarged, and then the heart stops working when somebody has hypertension. So I do want you to know how important the kidney is in helping control blood pressure. But you can't know exactly why that is right now. You've got to take a physiology class. Okay, the urinary bladder. Let's find a picture of the urinary bladder. Okay, let's look at the female reproductive tract. And here is the urinary bladder. And it's got some muscle in there. That muscle is what we call the detrusor muscle, and it can contract and squeeze urine out of the urinary bladder, and that's under involuntary control. So that detrusor muscle is what kind of muscle? Certainly you know it's not cardiac muscle, right? Because this is not the heart. This is urinary bladder. So it can't be cardiac muscle. What are your other two choices? Smooth or skeletal, okay? And it is smooth muscle. That's not under your voluntary control. It's controlled by the autonomic nervous system or maybe by some other compounds that might be in your circulatory system. Like caffeine can activate this muscle right here as well, causing it to contract to cause what? Voiding or urination. All right, so that is smooth muscle. There's something that can control urination, and that is the external urethral sphincter. Okay, which is skeletal muscle. Here is a skeletal muscle right here that is under voluntary control, and you know how to operate that as you grow up, right? So that you're not voiding urine constantly from the urinary bladder. Okay, so we have a lining, we have an epithelium on the inside of the urinary bladder. We got that detrusor muscle, and then we have some connective tissue on the outside. And it goes through a muscle layer that makes the floor of the pelvic cavity. Does anybody know what the floor of the pelvic cavity is called? It's got a special name. It's called the perineum. Okay, it's called the perineum or urogenital diaphragm that we see on this diagram here. And that's skeletal muscle, so you could practice, you could exercise these muscles if you wanted to. Okay, cause them to contract or not contract. And what was I going to say? Oh yeah, let's look at the histology of that urinary bladder on the next slide. Okay, so here we see a nice micrograph of the epithelium, and you should know, remember what kind of epithelium that is. Okay, and it was kind of a special epithelium that didn't fit in one nice and neatly in any of the categories. Remember, the categories were simple squamous, stratified squamous, simple cuboidal, stratified cuboidal, and the same thing for columnar. And then there was even sort of a strange one, that pseudostratified columnar ciliated epithelium, and this one is none of those. It's even stranger. What do we call this one? Yeah, transitional, right? Because these are shapeshifter cells. They can stretch out when the bladder fills with urine, and then when the bladder is voided, they go back to their short configuration when the bladder shrinks. So here we see the transitional epithelium, and you can remember these pillow-shaped cells in the epithelium. And then we have the detrusor muscle, and right then we have some connective tissue on the outside of the bladder. And I think that's all I want to say about the bladder. Yeah, because you're familiar with that. Okay, oh, one last thing. If we look at the orifice to the urethra, which is the tube that's taking urine out of the urinary bladder, and the orifices of the ureters, which are bringing urine into the urinary bladder. So here are the orifices of the ureters, here's the orifice of the urethra. It forms a special little structure that we call the trigon of the bladder. And I'm not sure what the structure is, but if somebody wants to look that up, and if somebody has a good idea of what the structure of that thing is, probably has some kind of function, okay, then let me know about it. Okay, and here's that internal urethral sphincter, and then the external is down over here in the male. We looked at it in the female already. Okay, so that's it for the urinary system. Any questions on urinary system? Ah, okay, I know what I wanted to do now. Let's practice everything that we learned. So let's write a list of the structural and functional unit of urine formation of the kidney. What do we call that? The nephron, right? So the nephron is the structural and functional unit of urine formation. We got to have those in our body. And there's two main components to the nephron. What are the two main components? Okay, so we got number one here and number two down over here. Hopefully I can fit it in. So somebody said tubular elements. I like that. Tubular elements. All right, so let's make a list of tubular elements, but let's list it in the correct order that filtrate is going to move through the nephron, starting with the proximal division and ending up with the most distal part of the nephron. Just like we learned mitosis, the phases of mitosis, in the correct time sequence. So what's the first tubular element? Yeah, I like Bowman's capsule. It runs around with some different names, but Bowman's capsule is really good. Of course, if it's on the practicum, you only need one correct answer. Okay. Then after Bowman's capsule, where does it go? Proximal convoluted tubule. Now, what is the name of the fluid that is in Bowman's capsule and the proximal convoluted tubule? Yeah, that is filtrate. Because Bowman capsule collects filtrate from the glomerulus via that filtration membrane. All right, and then what do we have? I'll put three right here. We have loop, I'm going to abbreviate it a little bit, loop of Henle. But remember, there are two parts to the loop of Henle. There is what? The descending and then the ascending parts. The descending takes filtrate down into the medulla, and the ascending brings it back up into the cortex of the kidney. Then after the loop of Henle that has these two parts, you have the fourth part, which is another twisty, turny tube, which we call the distal convoluted tubule. And then lastly, number five, some people may or may not include this in the description of a nephron because one of these might serve as a whole bunch of nephrons. One of these might collect filtrate from a whole bunch of convoluted tubules, but I think it's important to know what it is, and that is the collecting duct. And where does the collecting duct empty urine into? Okay, a couple different things. You could say, well, it takes urine to the tip of a renal pyramid. Okay, that's where urine is secreted. And what's right at the tip of a renal pyramid? There's a collecting basin right there. It's called a calyx. And remember, there's two kinds of calyces. The one right at the tip of a pyramid is called a minor calyx. Okay, so that's where the collecting duct takes. And so the fluid, now it's been processed, right, by these tubular elements and the vascular elements. So what is the fluid? What's the name of the fluid in the collecting duct? That is urine, because it's been processed. And the name of the fluid in the rest of these tubes right here is filtrate. Yeah. All right, so now we can move on to vascular elements. What kind of fluid is in a vascular element? Yeah, and I would be a little bit more general. I would say blood, because you even see red blood cells in the glomerulus. So it's really whole blood in a vascular element. And we should know how a drop of blood travels through the nephron. So there's a vessel bringing blood into the nephron. What's that thing called? Afferent arteriole. And where does an arteriole always take blood? To a special structure. A capillary, right? And this capillary is special because it's really leaky. So we give it a special name. What's the name of this capillary? Glow, and you should say it so that you can spell it. And so I have a hard time spelling it if I'm saying other words. So I'm going to say glomerulus. Oh, I spelled it right. That's good. All right. So, and glomerulus is really what? That's a capillary. Write that in your notes. That's a capillary. What happens in a capillary? Exchange, right? The kind of exchange that happens in the glomerulus is, I'll put it in parentheses, filtration. Filtration happens here. Okay, then the glomerulus, blood moves into the efferent arteriole. Ah, another arteriole. That's kind of strange, because where does an arteriole take blood? To a capillary. So there's another capillary before it goes back to the heart. We mentioned that before. So let's put that down over here, and we call this the peritubular capillaries. At least this one is called a capillary, but you got to know that the glomerulus is a capillary as well. Glomerulus is just number one, peritubular is number two. So it's a nice portal system. All right, so these peritubular capillaries are surrounding the proximal convoluted tubule, loop of Henle, distal convoluted tubule. And since it's a capillary, what's happening between the peritubular capillary and those tubes that I just mentioned? Exchange, okay? Because that's what it's specialized for. And what is the kind of exchange? We said that the exchange that's happening in the glomerulus is called filtration. What's the exchange that's happening in the peritubular capillaries? Tubular resorption. Resorption. And the third process is tubular secretion. So there's one last thing that I want to put on this list right here. It would be really nice if you have a good sense of how these compounds are moving, from which fluid to which fluid. So it's either going to be filtrate to blood or blood to filtrate. So this process of, where's filtration? Filtration right here in the glomerulus. How is that fluid moving? So I'm going to put that in even some more parentheses. Where does this fluid start and where does it end up? It starts in the glomerulus, which has blood. And where does that fluid move to? It moves to the fluid that's in Bowman's capsule, which we call what? Filtrate. So that fluid moves from blood to filtrate. And we know what that process is called. And it's called filtration. Okay? All small molecules get filtered, harmful ones and beneficial ones as well. Okay, but we don't want to lose the beneficial molecules in filtrate. like glucose, for example, would be a good example. Another really good example would be water, because we would dehydrate very rapidly. So those compounds are taken from, I tell you what, let's just say what it is. It's called tubular resorption. Okay, and where do these compounds start, and where do they end up? These are the helpful, beneficial compounds. They got filtered, sort of by accident, but not really. Okay. All right, tubular secretion goes from, oh yeah, I was right, it goes from filtrate to blood. It's put back in your body. So a good example of that maybe would be glucose. Water. These are all very important molecules that we can't lose in urine. Does anybody know what the concentration of glucose in the urine should be? It should be zero. You shouldn't lose any. Okay? And if you are losing glucose in urine, you have a pathological condition, an abnormal state that we call, does anybody know? That's diabetes mellitus. Okay, so it's an imbalance of regulation of sugar in the blood. And unfortunately, people lose glucose when that happens. All right, then the last process, in the blood, there still might be harmful compounds after filtration. And the kidney can get rid of those compounds. So material moves via secretion which way? Oh, you know what? Maybe I'll put that diagram back up over here. That might be handy to see because it's got the arrows on it. Right, that is going from secretion is when harmful compounds go from the blood into the filtrate. So we got how many processes that produce urine? One, filtration. Two, tubular resorption. And three, tubular secretion. And after all those processes happen in these parts of the nephron, guess what you end up with? Urine, right here. Okay. All right, so that's really important. That's what is shown on this slide right here. Well, you know, I really don't feel like drawing that nephron out, but I'd be happy to. Okay, should we draw that nephron out one more time? Okay, let's do it. But I have to erase this because I'm going to fall off the stage if I go over there and break an ankle or something. And you don't want that to happen because then you wouldn't get your last test. And then you'd have to take anatomy all over again. Okay. All right, so I'm erasing all of these good notes. Hopefully you took some notes or you could follow along really nicely. So what do I want to draw on the board? What do I want to draw? I want to draw the nephron, which is the structural and functional unit of what? Urine formation. All right, nephron. I didn't want to make it too big. Okay, so let's start with some tubular elements. All right, so the tubular elements are, I'm going to make it kind of big, and I'm going to abbreviate, so this is Bowman's capsule. And there's filtrate in Bowman's capsule, and then it goes into a tube. This tube is the proximal convoluted tubule, and then it goes down into so this is up in the cortex, and it goes down into the medulla via the descending loop of Henle. And sorry about you guys that are in the back. I don't know if you can see this blue pen. Let me try another one. It's kind of running out of ink. All right, so filtrate, it's not any better. Okay, then filtrate moves back up to the cortex via the ascending loop of Henle and then into another convoluted tubule, but this is the distal convoluted tubule, and then finally into the collecting duct right here. Okay, now we got to draw in our vascular elements with a red pen. Is that red? Here's red. Let's see. Oh, that works. Okay. So here is a blood vessel coming from a cortical radiate artery, and it brings blood into the Bowman's capsule. That is the afferent arteriole, and then it goes through a special little exchange mechanism right here, exchange structure that we call the glomerulus, and then it comes back out to another arteriole, and this is the efferent arteriole, and then, and I like the way I'm going to draw this now, because a student did this morning, okay? Here is that afferent arteriole bringing it to another capillary, and this capillary does what? Surrounds everything, like this, surrounds all the tubes. So this capillary is the peritubular capillary, right? And then after that capillary, right, it leaves the nephron via a venule, okay? So this blood, after going through all these, this plexus right here from the efferent arteriole leaves the nephron. All right, so this is pretty good, except we got one more detail to put on here. What do we have in the collecting duct once again? Urine. All right, how did we get that urine? How many processes were necessary? Yeah, three processes. And the first one is what we call filtration, where things that start in the blood, so I'm going to put a dot right here on that capillary, the glomerular capillary that has blood, and put an arrow on it, right, signifying that it's going into Bowman's capsule. This is process number one. And process number one is what we call filtration. And it goes how? From blood to filtrate. All right, so that's one. You got two more to do. The second process is when helpful or beneficial compounds that got filtered, okay, are put back in the body because we don't want it to end up in urine, like glucose and water. All right, so there are beneficial compounds that are in the filtrate. So I'm going to put a dot on a tube, right, maybe proximal convoluted tubule, and put an arrow going to where? Capillary. And what's in that capillary? Blood. So this is number two. Okay, so number two right here is what we call, I'm going to abbreviate tubular. Tubular what? Resorption. And you should know that resorption goes how? From filtrate back into your body, which is blood. Blood's in your body. How many more processes do we have? Only one more. Harmful compounds that don't get filtered are stuck in the plasma, but the kidney's smart enough to know to get it out of your body, out of the blood. So it's going to take a compound that's in the blood and put it into a tube of the kidney. And this is process number three. Process number three is what we call tubular secretion. And how does that go? Secretion goes from blood to filtrate. Just like that. And then after filtration and after tubular resorption and after tubular secretion, what are you left? What's the product? Urine. Okay? Okay. I want you to know that. Because in physiology, we'll look at how that happens. Okay, so that's it for urinary system. Any questions? No, good, okay. All right, so now let's move on to diversification system. Which is here. And here. Oops. Here. Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay. So what's the function of the reproductive system? yeah, to reproduce, that's what a lot of people say, okay? But I think you're missing the point, all right? Because we know that, how many sexes are there? Yeah, generally there's two, right? Male and female, okay? And so some people have these special structures like a penis and a testes here and seminal vesicles, right? And other people have a vagina and a uterus and an ovary, some very complicated structures and definitely a lot different than each other. Why is the reproductive system so complicated? Why does it have to be so complicated? If it's just to reproduce, there are some organisms that reproduce very nicely because they, like a hydra, which is a little polyp that grows in water, has tentacles and it eats by stinging things and then sticking it in its mouth. Okay, but a hydra can grow a little hydra on the side, and then when that little side hydra gets big enough, it just breaks away from the parent hydra and there's another one over there. All right, so you started with one and now you have two. And then that one grows up and buds off some more, okay, and now you got three and then four and 16 and all of a sudden you got a whole population of these hydra. But what can you tell me about the first hydra compared to the very last one that we just mentioned? They're exactly the same, right, because they came from the parent organism, okay? But in sexual reproduction, how humans reproduce, what can you tell me about everybody that's born? Everybody is different, right? So really, the function of the reproductive system is not just to produce offspring, but what? New and unique offspring. And that's what we call diversity. So really, the function of the reproductive system is not just to reproduce, but to make sure that everybody's different, so that diversity is maintained in our population. And that makes the species strong, because then that means if there is some kind of illness going around, the whole population doesn't come down with it. There's always going to be somebody that's going to be resistant to some kind of pathological process because we're all different. Okay. The other thing that I want to mention before we get into the male reproductive system, there's something called a baby safe law. Here's a website that you can check that out. And it started way back in 1999 in Texas, of all places. This is a really conservative state. And California thought it was a really good idea. And does anybody know what a baby safe law is? It just says...
Is it the safe surrender law?
Yeah, it's a safe surrender law. And it might be called different things in different states. And all states maybe don't have this law or provision, but California does, and for sure Texas does. And it might be national. We should probably look and find out if that's true. But that just says that within a certain period of time, usually it's 24 hours or 48 hours, after parturition, if a mother does not want to keep that baby of theirs, they can surrender it safely to a hospital or a fire station and probably even most police stations without any kind of legal recourse against them. And this law was instituted because sometimes a newborn baby, we find newborn babies in dumpsters and things like that. They were murdered because the circumstances were just too weird for that particular parent. Okay, so I don't know if you knew about that law. I wouldn't expect anybody in here to take any of their babies and put it in a dumpster, but you know, just pass that information around. And there's even a USC student that was accused of doing that just a couple years ago. And not just one time, but a couple times. And so it's really unfortunate, right? So that can be prevented very easily from happening, okay, because of this law right here. Okay, male reproductive system. So check out that website. The male reproductive system, okay, the primary reproductive structure we see here on the right-hand slide, that's the testes, right? That's a gonad. Gonad is just a general term for a certain kind of tissue or organ that has two main functions, whether it's the male or female. One function is to produce a gamete, and the male gamete is a sperm. So the male gonad is a testes. The testes produces sperm. The testes is a male gonad, and the gamete it produces is a sperm, which is a motile cell, which means it has a flagellum. It can swim around. Okay? It has half the number of chromosomes as all the other cells inside the human body that we call somatic cells. Gametes have half the number. That's one function of the testes or a gonad. The other function of a gonad is to produce sex steroids or sex hormones. And in the male, that is testosterone, and only testosterone. In the female, those sex steroids are estrogen and progesterone. And it is true that females do produce testosterone, not so much from their gonad, but from the adrenal gland. Okay, and that's an important hormone even in females. So females have testosterone and estrogen and progesterone. And once again, males are left out because they only have what? Only testosterone. Okay, so let's look at some other structures. The secondary structures, secondary reproductive structures. Right here is that gonad. It's not in the pelvic cavity where you would expect to see it. It is outside the pelvic cavity in a little fold of skin that we call the scrotum. Right? And when it's in the scrotum, it's colder than if it were in the pelvic cavity, and that's necessary for spermatogenesis to proceed normally. If it's at body temperature, those sperm will be misshaped and they won't have the right kind of motility, which means that they can't fertilize eggs. It'll be very difficult to fertilize eggs. So this testes is in the scrotum to be cooler. We'll look at the vasculature in a little bit just to see what, make sure that that happens. All right, and then sperm move from the testes right here into a bunch of coiled tubes right on the outside, kind of posterior aspect of the testes right here. And they're really microscopic tubes. You can almost see them. They're pretty big. And this is what we call the epididymis. Sperm are stored in the epididymis before ejaculation, but also they mature in the epididymis. So it's a natural staging point, but it's also functional because sperm have to become competent, and they do that right in the epididymis. Then during ejaculation, that sperm move into a tube that takes it, carries it into the pelvic cavity. And that tube is what we call the vas deferens. Sometimes it's called a ductus deferens. And it moves through the inguinal canal, which is a hiatus in the abdominal wall. It goes over the superior part of the bladder, progresses posteriorly, and then dives back down inferiorly. And what it does, okay, we change the name of the vas deferens, okay, into the ampule, because it forms a little swelling right there, and it joins up with another gland that we call the seminal vesicle. So seminal vesicle is one of three glands that add volume to the ejaculate. So now we have volume from the seminal vesicles and sperm joining together right here, right next to the prostate gland, which is right underneath the urinary bladder. And the job of the prostate gland, at least for this class, I think you should know that, again, it adds volume to the ejaculate, or just like the seminal vesicle. And these volumes contain nutrients for sperm because they're going to be exercising, right? The little flagellum is going to be whipping around. That needs energy, a sugar molecule, right? That flagellum needs to be activated, so there are activating agents in that volume that comes from the prostate and seminal vesicle. There's also a coagulating element in that ejaculate that then forms a plug of semen once it's in the female vagina, so it doesn't just run right out after intercourse. So the semen is contained within the vagina for a period of time and then slowly dissolve at a slow rate. What else is in the prostate gland? Oh, it produces something that fluoresces. We don't have any idea why that compound is there, because none of us run around with an ultraviolet light to look for occult semen. Occult semen just means semen that you can't see with your naked eye, but when you shine ultraviolet light on it, it turns into a really nice bright blue color. Okay? There's a chemical from the prostate in there. So legally, that's an important compound. And I think that's about it that I can remember right off the bat. Okay, so you got seminal vesicle, prostate gland. Now here we see that the vas deferens, as it enters the prostate, is no longer the vas deferens. We call it the ejaculatory duct. And the ejaculatory duct anastomoses with the urethra. So here is the urethra coming from the urinary bladder, and then here is the ureter coming from the kidney to the urinary bladder. All right, so ejaculate passes through this urethra right here, and the urethra is going through the penis. All right, so we can see that the reproductive system in the male and urinary system in the male join together right at this point within inside the prostate gland. All right, we're going to see that in the female, human female, the reproductive system never joins the urinary system, and that just helps prevent infectious materials from getting from the urinary tract into the reproductive tract, because the reproductive tract could produce very easily infertility in people, right? And if everybody becomes infertile, then that's the end of our species, right? So that's not advantageous at all. Okay, so males have this additional structure right here that has a bunch of sinuses in it that contain blood. It's arterial pressure blood, which is high pressure blood. So when these sinuses fill up, okay, then the penis becomes erect. So we call this erectile tissue. All right, on the dorsal side of the penis, we have actually two. I only see one, but they're two bilateral. There's one on the right, one on the left. Right, and this one of them is called a corpus cavernosum, but if you're pointing to both of them, then we have to use the plural term. We would say the corpora cavernosa is plural for them. Right, but there's also one on the ventral side of the penis, right, or anterior side of the penis, and that is the corpus spongiosum. The sinuses are not quite as big, looks more like a sponge compared to the cavernosa, which are large sinuses. And there's only one of those, right on midline. And that's why the urethra is going through the corpus spongiosum, because that's where it is. It's right in the middle of the penis. And that corpus spongiosum also makes the glans penis, right here, that not only has erectile tissue, but has afferent receptors. And let's see, what else about the penis? We're going to talk some more about the penis, but let's go back to the urethra. We see that the urethra goes through the prostate gland. That division of the urethra we call the prostatic urethra. And then when it leaves, it's no longer the prostatic urethra. It goes through the urogenital diaphragm, right, or the peritoneum, and we call that the membranous urethra as it pierces the pelvic cavity, and then it enters the penis. And so sometimes we call that the penile urethra or the spongy urethra, either one. Oh, and I forgot to talk about the third gland that adds volume to the ejaculate, and I see it right here. Right, that's the bulbourethral gland, and it secretes mucus. Right, and mucus has two main important functions, maybe three, but for sure two. Right, number one, it acts as a lubricant, and number two, since mucus is part protein, it acts as a buffer that can neutralize the acid that's inside the male urethra right here. And an acid will inactivate sperm, all right? So it maintains sperm motility. And the vagina is also very acidic, right? And it helps neutralize the acidity of the vagina as well. And the reason why the urethras are acidic and the vagina is acidic, because then it helps prevent bacterial infections. Bacteria don't like acid environments either, right? So that's beneficial. But not during intercourse, right? That has to be reversed. All right, so that's pretty good for this slide right here. Let's take a look at kind of a coronal section and talk about some other things. But we can't because we're out of time. I know, everybody's so disappointed. Okay, so on Monday we'll finish talking about the male reproductive system and female reproductive system. And then that's it for the class. Sign-in sheet is going around. So make sure you sign the sign-in sheet, please.